All right, let's dive in. Today, we're taking a closer look at the malakut.
The malakut.
This pretty unique electronic instrument. And we've got some really cool source material.
Yeah.
A conversation with Mario, the inventor, and some other malakut fans like Tony, a musician, Bill, an engineer, even a student who's like totally into the malakut.
They're like a good group.
Yeah. And we'll hear about, you know, the malakut's whole journey starting as a simple vibraphone synthesizer to this like versatile global percussion controller it is now. And seriously, you have to hear about some of its more unique features.
Yeah.
I mean, mimicking two violinists on a percussion instrument.
Wow.
Yeah, wild, right?
Yeah.
So to help us break it all down, we've got our expert here.
Happy to be here.
Who can, you know, shed some light on all the tech behind it.
Yeah, so one of the most interesting things about the malakut is how its story is really intertwined with the evolution of technology.
Okay.
Starting back in the 1980s with this thing called force sensing resistor technology.
Force sensing resistor technology.
Or FSR.
FSR, all right. Not exactly a household name. So what's the connection to the malakut?
Well, imagine trying to capture like the subtle nuances of a musician's touch, right, on an electronic instrument. FSR, which was originally used in medicine in the military.
Oh, interesting.
Turned out to be like the key.
Okay.
It could detect even the slightest pressure variations.
So
making the malakut incredibly responsive to the player's touch.
So that's how it gets that, you know, really realistic feel. But I mean, from what I understand, it wasn't always easy.
No.
In our sources, there's a clip where a saxophonist is giving feedback on an early version of the malakut.
Oh, yeah.
And, well, he doesn't really hold back. Let's just say that.
He did not.
Yeah.
Yeah, he even went so far as to say that the instrument sucks.
Wow.
But you know what? That blunt critique actually sparked a really productive collaboration between Mario and Bill, the engineer. So Mario would be, like, constantly pushing the boundaries, asking, can it do this?
Yeah.
And Bill, amazingly, would often have a solution, like, the very next day.
I'm starting to see what people call him, a wizard.
Right.
But, I mean, this wasn't just about, like, tweaking a few things here and there.
No.
The malakut, it went through a pretty dramatic evolution.
It did, absolutely.
Okay.
It started as a, like, pretty basic vibraphone synthesizer.
Okay.
But Mario's vision was much bigger.
I see.
He wanted to create an instrument that could play percussion sounds from all over the world.
Okay.
And that's where things get really fascinating.
Yeah.
They ended up creating a massive sound library.
Okay.
Containing hundreds of percussion instruments.
Hold on, hundreds?
Hundreds.
That's a lot for, like, any instrument, let alone one designed for a specific sound, like vibraphone.
You're telling me.
Right.
And the Dream Company was actually instrumental.
I see.
Pun intended. Okay. In making that happen, they collaborated with Mario to create this incredible ethnic percussion library.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we actually have a clip of Mario demonstrating the malakut's percussion capabilities, and it's pretty mind-blowing, actually. You hear all these complex, layered rhythms things you wouldn't expect from an instrument that, you know, started out as a vibraphone synthesizer.
Totally. It really shows how the malakut allows musicians to use techniques that are traditionally associated with melodic instruments to create like incredible rhythmic textures.
I see. So it's like breaking down those boundaries between, you know, and melodic and rhythmic.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
So we've talked about the malakut's percussion side.
Right.
But let's get back to its, you know, its roots.
Yeah.
The vibraphone.
Right.
You might think, okay, it's electronic. You know, how hard can it be to replicate a vibraphone?
Right.
But it's not that simple.
Not at all. Capturing those nuances of an acoustic instrument, like a vibraphone, electronically is a major challenge.
Yeah.
The malakut uses a 4GB sound set, which is like huge for a synthesizer.
Wow.
And has velocity switching for each vibraphone sound. That's how it achieves that like realistic vibraphone warmth and responsiveness.
And I read that Mario wouldn't be satisfied if it didn't sound real to him. You know?
Yeah.
So we're not just talking about a, like, decent approximation here.
Yeah.
He was going for authenticity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we actually have a clip where he demonstrates those vibraphone sounds.
Cool.
You'll hear him layering bass sounds, controlling the vibrato speed, even simulating bowing effects.
Yeah.
It really showcases the depth and expressiveness of the malakut.
Okay, that's impressive. Now, one thing that struck me
Yeah.
was the Malakoth's ability to like seamlessly switch octaves.
So rare.
It might seem like a small detail, but it
Yeah,
makes a
man.
huge difference, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. And remember, the Malakut is only 4 octaves wide. So without octave switching, you'd be pretty limited.
Yeah, it's like trying to play a piano piece
Yeah.
on like a tiny keyboard. It's
Okay.
not going to happen.
Right.
And then there are the sustain features,
Oh, yeah.
which seem almost magical. I mean, how can the Malakoth mimic two violinists
Right.
on a percussion instrument?
Yeah, so the Malakut has these really innovative sustain features.
Okay.
There's this workaround with Controller 64, melodic mode, hang mode,
All right.
all designed to give the musician incredible control over sustained notes.
So.
And yes, the two violinist thing is real.
That's amazing.
You have a clip of it.
Cool. Yeah, we'll definitely have to play that one. And you know what else I found interesting? There's this like playful banter between Mario and Bill in our sources about a Malakoth coffee mug.
Yeah, I love that
You
one.
know, it just shows like the close connection and sense of humor they shared, which I'm sure helped them
Oh,
through
yeah.
all the, the challenges of developing this instrument.
Yeah, it's clear that their friendship played a big role in the Malakoth's success.
For sure.
And speaking of practicality,
Yeah.
Bill really emphasized the importance of using the right amplification with the Malakoth.
Okay.
He recommended full-range stereo PA systems
Okay.
or powered speakers.
All right, so why is that so important? Why not just plug it into like any old amp?
Well, full-range systems are designed to reproduce a wide spectrum of frequencies accurately.
Okay.
Guitar and bass amps, on the other hand, are voiced for those specific instruments.
I see.
So, a guitar amp might have a mid-range boost
Okay.
to make the guitar sound punchy, for instance.
Yeah.
But the Malakoth needs a system that can reproduce a wider range of frequencies.
So using guitar amp could make the Malakoth sound like thin and boxy. Right.
Exactly.
And a
Sure.
bass amp might lack the clarity you need for those percussion sounds.
Totally.
Makes sense. And Mario also stressed the importance of stereo
Oh,
sound.
for sure.
He said playing the Malakoth in stereo creates a more, spacious,
Yeah.
realistic feeling, almost like playing an acoustic instrument.
Yeah, stereo sound is particularly important for electronic instruments
Yeah.
because it helps compensate for the lack of a physical sound source.
Yeah, all right.
So with an acoustic piano, the sound waves kind of radiate outward, creating a rich sonic environment.
I see.
But with an electronic instrument, the sound often comes from like a single point,
Right.
which can feel flat and unnatural.
So stereo sound basically creates the illusion of a wider sound state, right?
Exactly.
Giving the music more depth and dimension.
Yeah.
It makes sense, especially when you consider how important those spatial qualities are
Yeah, totally.
in percussion music.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's talk about redundancy.
Okay.
Bill, being the practical engineer that he is,
Oh, yeah.
really emphasized having backups, especially in live settings,
Absolutely.
which I can see why, especially after hearing about Mario's experience at Radio City Music Hall.
Yeah.
But five computers for two Malakoth players.
Right.
Isn't that a bit overkill?
Yeah, it might seem excessive.
Right.
But when you're performing in a high-stakes environment, like a
Yeah.
Broadway show,
Okay.
where the audience expects a flawless performance, that level of redundancy makes sense.
Right.
And remember, Mario had over 10,000 shows
Yeah.
under his belt at Radio City Music Hall.
Yeah. He'd seen it all,
Yeah.
knew what could go wrong. So
Exactly.
it's not just like paranoia, it's about being prepared for any eventuality.
Yeah.
Right.
And he even had a spare computer on standby
Wow.
and a foot switch
Okay.
to seamlessly switch between different audio mixes in case a computer froze.
He wasn't taking any chances.
Nope.
Now, let's shift gears a bit and talk about the impact of the Malakoth on like percussion music in general.
Yeah, so the Malakoth has definitely left its mark.
Okay.
It's essentially created a new category of instrument, the electronic mallet controller, combining the expressiveness of traditional mallet instruments
Okay.
with the sonic versatility
Yeah.
of, electronic synthesizers.
And that fusion has opened up a whole new world of possibilities for,
Oh, yeah,
percussionists.
absolutely.
Hey, yeah.
Remember, Mario said the Malakoth's percussion library, with all those instruments from around the world,
Yeah.
changed his whole approach to playing.
Oh,
It
wow.
inspired him to become more of a, like, percussionist
Yeah.
rather than just a mallet player.
Okay, and who can forget that clip where he mimicked two violinists playing simultaneously?
Right.
It really blurred the lines between melodic and rhythmic playing.
It did, yeah.
Yeah.
It really shows how the Malakut can like challenge traditional musical boundaries.
Yeah, and then there's that rhythm generation software,
Right.
which seems like a game changer for,
Yeah.
practice and creative exploration.
Absolutely.
It's like having a virtual bandmate, right?
It is. It can
Yeah.
generate all sorts of complex rhythms and variations,
Oh,
challenging the player to respond in new ways.
I see.
Mario even uses it to practice, like chord progressions,
Wow.
and improvise over existing tracks.
That's amazing. It's like having a personalized rhythm section at your fingertips.
Right.
Yeah.
And it speaks to Mario's constant, drive to innovate
Yeah.
and find new ways to like enhance the creative process.
It makes you wonder what he'll come up with next
Right.
and what other sonic landscapes will the Malakut, inspire.
It's exciting.
Yeah, this journey isn't over yet. So we've set the stage here.
We have.
Now let's get into some of the specifics that make the Malakut so unique.
That.
What are some of the features that really stand out to you?
Oh, there are a lot. But I think, let's start with welcome back to our deep dive into the Malakut. In part one, we trace the Malakut's journey from a simple vibraphone synthesizer to the globally inspired instrument it is today.
And we heard some incredible clips of Mario demonstrating just how versatile the Malakut can be. Those percussion sounds were really something else.
It really challenges the notion of what's possible on an instrument primarily designed for melodic playing.
Right. And we also got a glimpse into the close relationship between Mario and Bill. That playful banter about the Malakut coffee mug was a nice touch.
Their shared passion and sense of humor clearly fueled their creative partnership. But let's get back to some of the more technical aspects of the Malakut. One question that came up in our sources was about physically modeled vibes versus sampled ones.
That's a good point. It gets to the heart of how the Malakut creates its sounds. Can you break that down for us?
Sure. The Malakut relies on sampling. Essentially, that means recording high-quality audio snippets of a real vibraphone and then triggering those samples electronically when you play the instrument.
Okay.
The Malakut uses a massive 4 GB sound set, exceptionally large for a synthesizer, and each vibraphone sound has velocity switching to capture those dynamic nuances.
Mario even said if the Malakut sampled vibraphone sounds didn't sound real to him, he wouldn't be happy. But some might argue that sampling limits creativity. You're essentially stuck with whatever sounds have been recorded. How does the Malakut counter that?
It's true that sampling has limitations, but the Malakut's massive sound library and velocity switching give it a huge range of expression. And remember, Mario is constantly innovating. He's working with a renowned vibraphone maker, Kurt Gardner, to create a new, even higher resolution vibraphone sample library. So the possibilities are always expanding.
Okay, that makes sense. But why not use physical modeling? It seems like that would offer even more flexibility.
Physical modeling essentially creates a virtual model of the instrument's physical properties, the materials, shape, and how sound waves interact within it. It allows the instrument to generate sounds in real time, responding dynamically to the player's input.
So it's like simulating the entire acoustic process. That sounds incredibly complex.
It is, and it requires a lot of processing power. While it can be very accurate and responsive, it's also more demanding on the technology. Sampling, on the other hand, is a more straightforward approach.
So with the Malakut, it's about finding that balance between realism, complexity, and the technology available. And it seems like sampling, at least for now, is winning out.
Exactly. Now, let's move on to amplification. Mario and Bill both emphasize the importance of using a full-range stereo PA system, or powered speakers, to really get the best sound out of the Malakut.
Okay, but some listeners might be thinking, why not just use a guitar amp or a bass amp? After all, those are specifically designed for instruments.
Guitar and bass amps are often voiced to emphasize specific frequency ranges that characterize those instruments. A guitar amp might have a mid-range boost to make the guitar sound punchy, for instance, but the Malakut needs a system that can reproduce a wider range of frequencies accurately, from the deep bass to the high treble.
So, using a guitar amp could make the Malakut sound thin and boxy, while a bass amp might lack the clarity you need for those percussion sounds.
Right. A full-range system ensures that you hear the Malakut as it was intended, with a balanced and natural frequency response. It's like the difference between listening to music on a tiny mono speaker versus a high-fidelity stereo system.
And Mario also stressed the importance of stereo sound. He said playing the Malakut in stereo creates a more you know, spacious, realistic feeling, almost like playing an acoustic instrument.
Stereo sound is particularly important for electronic instruments because it helps compensate for the lack of a physical sound source. With an acoustic piano, for example, the sound waves radiate outward, creating a rich sonic environment. But with an electronic instrument, the sound often comes from a single point, which can feel flat and unnatural.
So stereo sound essentially creates the illusion of a wider sound stage, giving the music more depth and dimension. It makes sense, especially when you consider how important those spatial qualities are in percussion music.
Exactly. Now let's talk about redundancy. Bill, being the practical engineer that he is, really emphasized having backups in live performance settings.
I can see why, especially after hearing about Mario's experience at Radio City Music Hall. But 5 computers for 2 Malakoff players, isn't that a bit overkill? Wouldn't a simpler backup system be enough?
You're right, it might seem excessive.
Yeah.
But when you're performing in a high-stakes environment like a Broadway show, where the audience expects a flawless performance, that level of redundancy makes sense. And remember, Mario had over 10,000 shows under his belt at Radio City Music Hall. He had seen it all and knew what could go wrong.
So it's not just paranoia. It's about being prepared for any eventuality.
Right. And he even had a spare computer on standby and a foot switch to seamlessly switch between different audio mixes in case the computer froze.
He wasn't taking any chances. Now let's shift gears a bit and talk about the impact of the Malakoff on percussion music.
The Malakoff has definitely left its mark. It's essentially created a new category of instrument, the electronic mallet controller, combining the expressiveness of traditional mallet instruments with the sonic versatility of electronic synthesizers.
And that fusion has opened up a whole new world of possibilities for percussionists.
Exactly. Remember, Mario said the Malakoff's percussion library, with all those instruments from around the world, changed his whole approach to playing. It inspired him to become more of a, like, percussionist rather than just a mallet player.
And who can forget that clip where he mimicked 2 violinists playing simultaneously? It really blurred the lines between melodic and rhythmic playing.
It really shows how the Malakoff can challenge traditional musical boundaries.
And then there's that rhythm generation software, which seems like a game changer for practice and creative exploration. You were saying it's like having a virtual bandmate.
It can generate all sorts of complex rhythms and variations, challenging the player to respond in new ways. Mario even uses it to practice chord progressions and improvise over existing tracks.
That's incredible. It's like having a personalized rhythm section at your fingertips.
And it speaks to Mario's constant drive to innovate and find new ways to enhance the creative process.
It makes you wonder, what will he come up with next? And what other sonic landscapes will the Malakoff inspire? This journey isn't over yet.
We still got more to explore. Let's move on to the final part of our deep dive, where we'll unpack some of the Malakoff's more nuanced features and discuss its potential impact on the future of music technology.
Stay with us. You won't want to miss this. We're back for the final part of our deep dive into the Malakoff. We've covered a lot of ground, the history, the technology, the impact, but there are still some fascinating details we haven't explored yet.
Yeah, we've talked about the big picture stuff, you know, amplification, stereo sound, the importance of redundancy. But now I kind of want to zoom in on some of the smaller but equally important features that contribute to the Malakoff's unique character.
Perfect. Let's get into the nitty-gritty.
One feature that stands out to me is the Malakoff's ability to, like, seamlessly switch octaves. It seems like a simple thing, but it makes a huge difference in terms of playability.
Especially considering the Malakoff's, you know, limited range. Without octave switching, trying to play anything remotely complex would be, like, a nightmare.
Exactly. And octave switching isn't just about practicality. It can be used creatively to expand the instrument's range and create interesting sonic effects.
Mario mentioned using a foot switch to quickly jump between octaves while playing. That opens up all sorts of possibilities for, like, melodic improvisation and rhythmic variation.
It gives the player a level of flexibility you wouldn't normally expect on an instrument like this. And then there are the sustain features, which we touched on earlier. The Malakoff has several different modes that allow for, like, nuanced control over sustained notes.
Right. We talked about the melodic mode and that clever workaround with Controller 64. But there's also the hang mode, which sounds pretty intriguing.
Hang mode is really interesting.
Yeah.
It lets you sustain a note indefinitely by pressing a foot switch. This frees up your hands to play other notes or manipulate other parameters while that sustained note rings out.
So it's like having a built-in drone or pedal tone that you can use to create, like, atmospheric textures or harmonic backdrops.
Precisely. And remember how Mario demonstrated the Malakot's ability to mimic two violinists playing simultaneously? Hang mode could be a key part of creating those layered, sustained sounds.
It's amazing how much sonic depth the Malakot has.
Mm.
Now, I want to circle back to that rhythm generation software that Mario was so excited about. It seemed like a real game changer, even though we had some trouble hearing it clearly in the source material.
It's a revolutionary tool for practice and composition. Imagine having a virtual bandmate that can generate complex rhythmic patterns and variations, pushing you to respond in new ways.
From what I understand, it's not just about practicing existing rhythms. You can actually use the software to compose new ones.
That's right. Mario even talked about assigning different functions to the Malakot's pads, allowing him to control the software without having to, like, touch a computer screen.
That's a brilliant design choice. It keeps the focus on the instrument itself, on the music, rather than getting bogged down in the technology behind it.
It speaks to the seamless integration between the Malakot's hardware and software. They work together to create a really intuitive playing experience.
So we've explored all these amazing features, the octave switching, the sustain modes, the rhythm generation software. It's clear that the Malakot is a truly unique and innovative instrument. But I'm curious, what do you think its lasting impact will be on the world of, you know, music technology?
I think the Malakot has pushed the boundaries of what's possible with electronic mallet instruments. It's inspired a whole new generation of instruments and controllers. And more importantly, it's shown that electronic instruments can be just as expressive and nuanced as their acoustic counterparts.
It challenges the idea that electronic music is somehow, you know, less authentic or less organic.
Exactly. The Malakot is a testament to the power of human ingenuity and the endless possibilities of music technology. It shows what can happen when you combine a passion for music with a deep understanding of technology.
Well said. So as we wrap up our deep dive into the Malakot, I'm left with a sense of wonder and excitement. This instrument has come such a long way, and it seems like it's still evolving. What new sonic landscapes will the Malakot inspire? What musical boundaries will it help us break?
I don't have the answers, but I'm eager to find out. And I encourage you, our listener, to join us on this journey of sonic discovery. Keep listening, keep exploring, and keep pushing the boundaries of what's possible with music.
That's a great note to end on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the Malakot. Until next time, keep the music playing.